Well, they called me once, and they called me twice. Third time they called me, it was cold as ice. They say, get to the table, get to the table on time. Better make up your mind if you wanna get to the table on time.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Tony Vinn, who's a professor and cropping systems extension agronomist in the Department of Agronomy at Purdue University. He has served as extension coordinator for the agronomy department at Purdue and as associate editor for Agronomy Journal, Crop Science, and Soil and Tillage Research. He has been the co-chair of the Indiana Crop Advisory Conference since 2003. Welcome to Background Briefing, Tony Vinn.
Thank you for this opportunity to speak to you and your listeners.
So already, in addition to the 1,300 counties across 29 states that have been designated by the United States Department of Agriculture as a natural disasters area, just on Wednesday, the Secretary of Agriculture, Mr. Vilsack, added 39 counties and 8 more states as natural disaster areas. Where does it stand where you are? You're really right in the middle of the Corn Belt, aren't you?
Yes, Indiana happens to be in the center part of the drought disaster area, in quotes, in the eastern Corn Belt. And we have 92 counties in Indiana, and at last count, at least 55 of those were in the so-called disaster category.
So we have corn way up now in the last few months, up 60%. And then you have on top of that, as you've mentioned, the competing uses for what's left. There's been no spillover from last year, or a little spillover from last year. So you said that the ethanol people might get first grab at, as opposed to the people, the feed for cattle and for fattening, for food, for meat, etc. Are those things determined by politics or agribusiness or what?
Well, the renewable fuel standard essentially mandates a certain level of ethanol use. And that level of ethanol use today has involved an annual usage of 4.9 billion bushels of corn. The good news is, of course, that approximately one-third of the weight of corn going into ethanol is a valuable byproduct that is used in the livestock industry as dry distiller's grain, which is a very important protein supplement. So ethanol's use is not entirely lost to the livestock industry. But it is fair to say that the mandate is accounting for a increasing percentage of the expected corn crop in 2012. And so one of the major questions, perhaps, that politicians will need to address is, number one, should the mandate for the renewable fuel standard be left unchanged, considering, you know, the competing uses for livestock feed, for exports, as well as for other domestic uses? And one of the factors that will also have to be considered is whether the fuel blenders have any flexibility to perhaps use credits that they've built up in terms of making more ethanol than they were mandated to in previous years. And so if they were to apply credits, if the blenders were to apply credits from previous years, then there might be some, perhaps a 20% reduction in the amount of grain corn that would need to go into ethanol in the 2012-13 marketing year.
Again, I'm speaking with Tony Vinn, a professor and cropping systems extension agronomist in the Department of Agronomy at Purdue University. He serves as extension coordinator for the agronomy department at Purdue and an associate editor for Agronomy Journal, Crop Science, and Soil and Tillage Research. He's been the co-chair of the Indiana Crop Advisory Conference since 2003. So, Tony Vinn, tell me though, for the consumer, what does this mean if the price of corn already in the last 4 weeks has gone up 50%. How's it going to impact the consumer later in the year in terms of what they'll be buying for food on the table?
The agricultural economists that I've heard address this topic have estimated that it means at least a 5% increase in the price of food from what we knew with the projections based on the last crop yield estimate from USDA, which is based on 146 bushel per acre corn crop. The corn is just a very important feed ingredient for pigs, poultry, dairy, beef, you name it. In the short run, I think that price increases for some products are more likely than they are for other products. For instance, if livestock farmers decide that they cannot afford the feed or they don't have the feed available to keep their herd size as large as it is today, then in the short run, meat products could be cheaper because a herd reduction might lead to more slaughtering. But in the long term, of course, that would result in a price increase because once herd size is reduced, then that automatically will reduce meat supplies in the future. But there are many, many items in the grocery store today that have corn as an ingredient. And because the presence of corn is so pervasive, not only for meat and milk and egg products, but also in so many other cereal food items, sugars, etc., and syrups, we essentially are estimated today that we will face at least a 5% increase in food costs because of the damage that has been done by the drought combined with the heat thus far in 2012.
Well, just in closing, Tony Vinn, obviously higher food prices are going to happen, and this is happening at a time when the world economy is weak, as is the U.S. economy. In some parts of the world, there's an expectation that this will lead to political instability. In many ways, a lot of analysts have said that the Arab Spring was propelled in many ways by the unsustainable and unaffordable rises in food prices that led people to take to the streets. What's your understanding of the global impact of food shortage? Because I understand that as the drought is deepening here in the United States, there's also problems in Russia, Ukraine, and Australia in terms of crop yields.
It is extremely important that we, in food-producing nations, devote more resources to the issue of food security, because if we don't, we will not only fail to meet the needs of the populations that we have today, but we will be coming up short more often at the growth in population that's expected to take place by the year 2050, and we will not be able to meet the changing diets of people who naturally aspire to diet improvements when income levels are changing in their homes and in their families. Food security, an investment in food security, is the issue in terms of spending priorities for research in terms of spending priorities for education. And if we don't take this crisis as a wake-up call to how thin our production actually is compared to the annual need, if we don't remove ourselves from the complacency that there will always be enough food in the grocery store, whether here in the United States or in African countries, if we don't get away from the complacency, then we will be in a much worse situation, geopolitically as well, than the unrest that has been experienced in recent years, or the unrest and the discomfort that could occur partially in response to this. So I think that we need to understand that investments in stability and resiliency of crop production in the face of climate change, in the face of less and less land being that is suitable for crop production, being available to crop production because of competing uses, we simply need not only to retain our best land for crop production, we need to engage more scientists in understanding how to improve both water use efficiency and nutrient use efficiency in our crop systems to guarantee food security for the future. And to me, the overall geopolitical issue is not just a short-term focus on food security, but a very much increased emphasis on long-term food security, whether it's here in the developing world or in the developed world. In both places, the national priority has to be on food security. And to the extent that we do that, we'll be able to better meet the needs of tomorrow's citizens.
Well, I thank you for joining us, Tony Venn, and I hope this happens, and I hope we have a serious debate about it, but there's a lot of global warming denial, even in amongst our politicians, so that's going to be a tough road to hoe.
There is no denial about climate variability, and so I view the whole aspect of what's happening in terms of resiliency to temperature and precipitation fluctuations that are more extreme than what we've witnessed in the past. I view this whole aspect of not only crop variety selection, but crop management decisions and soil quality improvement considerations to try to have a enhanced yield as well as enhanced stability of yield in the face of climate variability as just being extremely important.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, Tony Venn.
You're very welcome, sir. It's been my pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Tony Venn, who's a professor in cropping systems, extension agronomist in the Department of Agronomy at Purdue University. He served as extension coordinator for the agronomy department at Purdue and as associate editor for Agronomy Journal, Crop Science, and Soil and Tillage Research. He has been the co-chair of the Indiana Crop Advisory Conference since 2003.